The good, the bad, and the alternative. By Madame Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 9. Never Coming Home. Rose. There was a hand on Rose's wrist, tugging, pulling, cajoling. She didn't want to move, didn't want to get up. She was kneeling on unyielding concrete, knees aching, legs sticky with... Her mind shied away, not processing the information. Her eyes stared ahead, unseeing, a blur of red filling her vision until she could drown in it. Someone spoke, but the words did not matter. The red mattered. Rose hadn't realized how many colors could be found in red, how many shades, how many variations in hue. The tugging on her wrist stopped. It was replaced with something else, hands wrapping around her from behind, lifting her. She hung, limp, not seeing the point. She was shaken, roughly, and some animal instinct kicked in, forcing her to find her footing rather than be at their mercy. More speaking, more irrelevant words, more inane chatter, the tugging on her wrist came again. And though she kept her eyes on the red, 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 she allowed herself to be pulled, stumbling backwards until she could no longer see it. She was turned, gently, hands on her shoulders, and she realized there were stairs. She understood, in theory, the concept. She stepped slowly, feeling a hand on her back, someone nudging her forward. They placed her hand on the railing, and she obediently clung like a child as she descended, down and down and down, barely aware of each movement. What was the point of being aware? The stairs ended, and she was directed into a room. She had been there before, knew how to navigate the space, but it wasn't worth the effort to identify it. Some automatic notion of propriety had her kick off her shoes, abandoning them near the door. Down the hallway she was pushed, into the bathroom. She let her eyes travel for a moment, and the mirror... Rose had been wearing something neutral, something gray, she was sure of it, but that no longer seemed to be the case. The girl in the mirror stared at her with pupils blown wide and an ashen face splattered with red. Rose's vision trickled downward, following the trail. Her dress was a riot of crimson and scarlet. An explosion of garnet dripping down her body, it had a texture, this color, filled with bits and chunks. It was incomprehensible. She felt wrong, she realized absently. Numbness had washed over her, a curtain of fog dampening everything around her. Movement in the mirror reminded her of her companion. She forced herself to stop staring into the impossible display painted onto her torso, to look over and identify the person standing in the doorway. Ah, her friend. Dave seemed nervous, on edge. He clutched a towel in one hand and a bundle of clothes in the other. His lips were dry, moving with haste. This time she heard him. Rose, hey. Listen to me, you gotta change. Bro's giving us in like 5 minutes. If you don't get out of that stuff, he's gonna flip his fucking lid, go behind the curtain, get all that shit off, toss it out to me, I'll leave this stuff on the sink, fuck off so you can rinse. Dave seemed nervous, on edge. He shifted from foot to foot and spoke rapidly. His face was wet, sparkling in the light. Rose understood somewhere that this time she needed to listen to him, so she nodded slowly and complied. Behind the curtain, she found the dress much harder to remove than she'd expected. The color had soaked through, sticking the fabric to her body. When she finally freed herself of it, she threw it half-heartedly over the rod. It landed with a very wet sound, one that made her stomach lurch. Sick. Got it. Thanks. I'll be right outside. Chat if you need me. Rose heard the door slam. She stared at the wall, at the handle to the shower. Rinse off? Looking down at herself, she understood, red all over. It painted her skin and bra in a way that should have mattered, but Rose was not thinking about what mattered. So she grabbed the handle and yanked it, then stood unflinching as the icy water made the red drain away. When the water ran clear, she turned it off, then stepped out onto the bath mat. There was the towel, as promised, and the clothes. Rose dried herself off roughly without much care, taking violent swipes with the towel. Her bra was soaked, her underwear too, both still stained red, but it appeared someone had thought of that. The shirt and pants were Dave's, maybe, but the sports bra and the underwear still had the tags attached. She tore them off, dressing quickly. There were voices outside the door. Opening it revealed Dave's brother, his hand on John's shoulder, ready to steer him into the bathroom. Dave was holding a trash bag open, and Rose noticed her dress and shoes were inside. She dropped the wet undergarments in with the rest. A very green John stumbled past her, shirtless, his mouth smeared with something foul. She heard retching behind her as she stepped into the hallway. "Don't let her wander off. I'll take this stuff and get the truck ready. I need you to handle them both while I deal with the hard part." The man spoke to Dave as if Rose was not present, but this was fine. She saw him take the bag from Dave with hands covered in latex gloves, took note of the curious clear plastic he seemed to have encased himself in over his clothes. But those were meaningless, inane details, so rather than ponder, she simply stood there. She stared at the wall, not really seeing it, as she felt waves of white noise piercing into her skull, a high-ringing whine that seemed to envelop her. If Dave spoke, she did not hear him. If John sobbed, she was numb to it. Her world narrowed to the bland safety of knowing nothing, of seeking nothing, of doing nothing. The next time Rose was aware enough to acknowledge her surroundings, it was the result of her banging her head. She gasped, hand darting to the new spot of pain, and was surprised to feel her smarting knuckles graze something solid above her. Looking around revealed what she had failed to see. She was sitting in the back seat of a pickup truck, with John sitting beside her, doubled over a trash bin. In front of her, she could hear Dave hissing out a furious stream of quiet words, and the driver was the target of his ire, his brother clutching the wheel in a white-knuckled grip. He noticed her watching, his head suddenly jerking to the right to make eye contact through his sunglasses for just long enough that she could see fury in his amber eyes. Then he was staring ahead again, squinting into the glare of the rapidly climbing sun. Rose hastily turned away, looking out the window. They were on the highway, she realized, outside the city entirely. Dread began to build in her chest, and she touched her sternum, then looked down in surprise. She was wearing one of Dave's shirts with the red sleeves, her dress nowhere in sight. Her bra was a different one, too, no underwire pressing against her. Her jeans were his as well, short and fitting loosely. The Vans on her feet fit equally as poorly, and she suddenly slipped them off to rub her aching toes. The socks had little green apples on them. How quaint.
"Fucking watch it!"
Dave's brother shouted, and the truck swerved wildly, dodging a driver who'd changed lanes without warning, the horn blaring as Mr. Strider slammed it. A groan to Rose's left, followed by more vomit noises, but the audible thunk from behind her was more curious. She turned, looking through the little tinted window into the bed of the pickup, which was covered by a truck cap. Several shovels, gallons of bleach, a small trash bag, and a long black bag were all rolling around. The terminal item was unambiguously a body bag. Rose began to tremble. The events of this morning, it was no bad dream. The dark smears on the clear plastic sheeting lining the truck bed were clear enough.
"Sit your ass down, you're blocking my rear view."
The harsh growl of Mr. Strider's command had Rose scrambling back into her seat, heart pounding. Kanaya was in that bag.
"This is not real. This is not real. I'm going to wake up soon, right?"
Rose's eyes were drawn to the boy sitting next to her as he spoke. John was shaky green-tinged and looked ready to start crying. Rose wondered why she couldn't feel the tears welling up herself. Another thud from behind her made her hair stand on end. What if...
"I want to see her."
It slipped out in a whisper, nearly inaudible.
Rose tried again, louder this time, trying to get the attention of Mr. Strider. Let me see her! She sounded desperate that time, a bit deranged, maybe. Another thunk sounded like a fist frantically banging. Dave turned in his seat and looked back at her. His eyes were puffy and bloodshot behind his shades. You can't be serious, he said in a strained voice, the distress evident. She grimaced. The boys were falling apart, but she couldn't recall the details she needed to see, needed to know for sure. Had they even checked for a pulse? What if she's alive in there, in pain but alive? I have to check on her. She could be scared. We need to stop the car! Rose was begging now, pleading, becoming more certain.
Dave, give the witch a Xanax. They're in the glove box. Dramamine is in there, too. Better make your buddy take one if he's going to survive this drive.
Mr. Strider's voice was terse, the sort of tone that brooked no argument from cowards. Dave, of course, began rummaging in the glove box immediately. Rose unclipped her seatbelt. He wasn't taking her seriously. Kanaya could be bleeding out. She heard the engine roar, saw the speedometer creeping higher. Up ahead was an exit. They needed to pull off the road.
You are not going to drug me into oblivion so my girlfriend will bleed out alone. Stop the car! Stop the car! Do it now!
Rose shouted as she lunged forward, hands grasping the steering wheel in her mind's eye. John screamed, a sound that was hauntingly familiar. Dave's brother swore, his right hand leaving the wheel. Before Rose could close her hands around her prize, his elbow had slammed into her chest, and she rocketed backwards, landing half on John and shoving his head into the bin.
Holy fucking shit, she's lost her goddamn mind.
Dave's voice was pure panic. Rose wheezed, trying to recover, and John shoved her off of him.
What the hell, Rose? You could have killed us!
John's voice wavered, shock and fear evident. Rose wasn't sure how much she cared. Up front, Mr. Strider had both hands back on the wheel, glaring poisonously at her through the rearview mirror. How dare he?
Either convince her to take the happy pill, or I'm going to stop this truck just long enough to shove it down her throat. I'm not putting up with this shit.
Mr. Strider snapped at Dave, who put his hands up defensively. Rose, still unbuckled, was able to see a bag full of unlabeled pill bottles in his lap.
Bro, I'm looking. You didn't exactly label them.
The man cut his brother's panicked words off.
The fucking pills have the word Xanax printed on them. Hurry it up before the little killer in my backseat decides she hasn't broken enough spines today.
That was enough for John to start vomiting again. Though by now there was nothing left filling the car with the pained sounds of his dry heaving. From what Rose could see of Dave's face, his brother's words had stung. He began opening bottles, the pills rattling ominously. Rose turned around, knees on the seat, studying the window between her and Kanaya. Could she pry it open, shove herself through? There was whispering in the front seat, an argument under their breath. But Rose's focus was narrowed on that window, on Kanaya waiting to be rescued on the other side. The sharp pain of a needle in her calf shocked her. But hands held her leg in place, and all she could do was scream. In moments it was over, an icy poison spreading up her leg. She whipped around in the seat and found Dave's hand holding the weapon, guilt distorting his features. John, who'd been too sick to function mere moments ago, was withdrawing his hands, his own involvement evident before he could hide it. He had helped restrain her.
What? What did you do?
Rose tried to sound accusatory, but her words seemed floaty, disconnected, a little slurred at the end. Her thoughts were slowing down and she felt woozy. Her friends had betrayed her, but she couldn't lash out. She suddenly lacked the energy, the motivation.
We sedated a threat to everyone in this vehicle's lives. Buckle up and chill the fuck out. You did good, both of you. She'll get over it.
The voice in the front seat felt far away, and when John reached across Rose to buckle her in place, she couldn't lift her arms to push him away. A darkness was settling over her vision, and within moments the tranquilizing effects had carried her away.
Rose?
The voice swam into her consciousness. Wake up! Rose blinked blearily, trying to put the pieces of her mind together.
Dave's bro is letting us get some fast food while he buys gas.
John was gently shaking her shoulder, his face pinched in concern.
Oh, God. Red. Red on red on black, a black body bag. Kanaya was dead. Kanaya was dead in the trunk because Rose couldn't stop looking for something that she didn't deserve, and then she'd lost hold of her sanity, tried to force the car off the road.
John.
Her friend, she met his eyes, watched him hesitate. His color looked better, more gold than green, she noted, but it was clear he was shaken to his core. Why wouldn't he be?
I'm so sorry for scaring you, I panicked.
Understatement, Rose cringed to herself.
Are you okay?
Don't worry, I'm just fine.
John smiled wide, so very fake, but Rose couldn't bear to call him out on it.
Honestly, I'm just worried about you. Can we get out of this car, please? I want to talk to you.
And here he lowered his voice, despite both Striders being outside the vehicle. Without Dave's bro eavesdropping. She nodded rapidly, reaching down to unbuckle her seatbelt. John's was already off, and the two quickly hopped out of the car on the side opposite where the others stood, near the gas pump. It was one of those combination gas station fast food places, the building sporting the word Valero on one half, Wendy's on the other. Their vehicle was the only one present, and the sun was high in the sky. For the first time in a long time, Rose could feel real warmth on her skin. She wanted to take a picture of the beauty of it to show to Kanaya. The agony of grief engulfed her as she remembered her beautiful, wonderful, long-suffering girlfriend's dead at her feet, dead because of her. She would never get to see the sunshine again. Rose swallowed around the lump in her throat, then followed John into the Wendy's. Dave caught up to them just inside the door.
Yo, Rose, please tell me you're back in reality. I had to talk bro now from taking extreme measures like 3 fucking times already. We're talking XXX, censored by the FCC, guaranteed nightmares for all involved. I'm running interference out the ass, and you...
His voice cracked, and he shoved his shades up, rubbing his eyes. I don't want you to get hurt, all right? So please get your shit together and keep it that way. Dave shoved the shades back into place, then pulled a phone out of his pocket. Rose narrowed her eyes at the device. It was hers.
I assure you I am no longer suffering under any delusions. Are you going to give that back to me and tell me why we didn't inform the authorities?
Rose said this stiffly, body bags and handcuffs in her mind's eye. She made a beckoning motion, but Dave shook his head. He pulled out John's phone as well, then his wallet, shoving both devices back in his pocket as he began walking toward the counter. Rose raised her brows at John, who shrugged and followed him. She reluctantly brought up the rear, allowing Dave to make the transaction while she spoke to John.
Do you know where we are going?
She asked him under her breath, not wanting the cashier to overhear.
Has Mr. Strider explained what's going on?
She quickly followed up with before John could respond. He frowned.
Kinda, but I think you should let Dave explain it. I wasn't really able to follow it. The explanation, I mean...
His golden face looked dulled, the events of the day wearing on him, and she thought she spotted fear in his eyes, fear of her, or of Dave's brother. Rose tried for a smile, but the guilt twisted her lips, and she had the feeling it wasn't very reassuring.
I got the goods. Let's bail on this funhouse. Unless you need to piss, we should get back to the truck before bro gets antsy.
Dave was carrying 4 to-go bags, juggling a drink tray. John hesitated a moment, then spoke.
I'm going to go wash my mouth out before I eat that. I'll be right back, he said and slipped away.
Rose gestured at a nearby table.
Set that down for a moment and fill in the details while we wait. This isn't standard protocol for manslaughter.
She grimaced at the word, but couldn't think of a suitable substitute. Dave put down the food and sat, and she took the chair across from him. He took a deep breath, blowing it out slowly.
Don't think this has a standard protocol. I don't like what we're doing either, but I like the idea of you being executed less. Bro's about to have more hunters in town. They were supposed to arrive today, actually. I translated something evil, apparently, and even if Kanao wasn't, we'd all still be put down for meddling with dark shit.
Dave shuddered and Rose's heart pounded. She'd known, intellectually, that his brother was part of an organization that he had to answer to someone, but knowing that was different from understanding what it meant. She wouldn't be handcuffed, apparently. She would be dead. Maybe she deserved it.
deserved to be tossed in a hole somewhere for what she had done. But Dave had said all she realized, and that scared her worse. Dave would be in danger, John too. More bodies laid at her feet. Dave took a sip of his drink, then continued. Instead, we're hiding the evidence and apparently doing something to make sure that thing doesn't come back, using Kanaya as a beacon, so we can't tell people what happened, and Mama can't perform Shamira, can't give Kanaya a proper burial. He had to pause a moment, his fingers drumming. I've got your phones, because Bro doesn't trust you guys not to call your parents. We have to be radio silent while we do this. He's going to talk to Mama himself when we get back, but for now, we can't risk it. This made him shift in discomfort and sent a new wave of guilt through Rose. Kanaya's mother didn't know. Miss Grubb loved Dave like her son, and had spent the past few years trying to win Rose over. She was so kind and supportive. Even indulging Rose's obsession, she would be devastated when she found out what Rose had done to her daughter. Vriska. Vriska's plan that morning had been simple. She waited until she heard the shower running, signaling that the hunter was sufficiently distracted. She quietly got dressed, appreciating the soft blue shirt, the cotton sweatpants that covered the splint. She arranged extra pillows under the blankets until it looked convincing in the darkness. Then she slipped outside, exiting the bedroom as quietly as she could manage with the crutch and the splint. Her leg was no longer in unfathomable agony, but she'd taken no chances even donning the cloak, another gift from Kanaya. She had thought it was time to go thank her. She'd snuck out of the apartment, frantically mashing the call button on the elevator. When it failed, she'd descended the stairs, sitting and scooting on her ass. She hadn't wanted to waste her strength before she reached her destination. The hunter's truck, thankfully, had been left with the window cracked. She had removed her shoelace and lowered a looped knot through the gap until she could tighten it around the little peg, and voila, unlocked. The concept of hot wiring, though, had been foiled before she'd begun when the screaming started, emanating from the roof of the very building she'd snuck out of. She'd strained her senses, trying to get a read of the situation high above, but the willing blood could only take her so far. So instead, she'd shoved the crutch under the back seat and then shifted. In a rather dramatic puff of smoke, she became much smaller, much more vulnerable. The transformation was instantaneous, but it had been more painful than usual. Probably a result of her injuries, but hiding was much easier this way. And the weakness of her leg was distributed in lesser form across multiple limbs. So she'd scuttled into the shadows inside the vehicle and waited. Waited as the hunter loaded bags in the bed of the pickup, bags that smelled like blood and salt. As a scorpion, her sense of smell remained intact, but interpretation of whose blood, she'd wanted to assume she was out of practice. So she'd waited. As Dave and two other humans loaded themselves in the truck as the hunter started driving, waited, growing more and more uneasy, as the human wearing apple-patterned socks became hysterical, screamed Kanaya's name, and said she was injured. Waited as the hours passed, rage building as she heard the word dead, heard talk of dark witchcraft, heard the hunter say he was breaking his own laws to keep the murderers alive. Waited until talks of food and gas signaled a stop. Making a split-second decision, she'd clung to the pant leg of the other human in the back seat, the one who'd been vomiting. She needed out. And the other was too volatile. She'd waited, silent, as the teen, John, had conversed with the others.
"I'm going to go wash my mouth out before I eat that. I'll be right back," he said.
And she clung tighter as he stomped out of sight from the other two, heading for the men's room just a few more steps. The bathroom was blissfully empty, so Vriska let go, scuttling out of range of his shoes and heading towards the main door. While he was bent over the sink, distracted, she'd transformed. It was always a louder switching back, a dramatic bang accompanying the bloom of smoke as she instantly transformed.
To cover for her aching legs, she leaned against the door, trying to appear as though she was blocking his exit. The magical smoke cleared just as he bolted upright. Turning toward the source of the disturbance, spotting her, he gasped as she grinned at him, putting her fangs on display.
"Holy shit, where did you come from?"
he stammered, fear evident as he backed away. Riska's anger surged at the question. She had spent hours pondering what must have happened to Kanaya, and knew he had to be in on it. How dare he act like a victim? She snarled, imagining blood in her mouth, making her eyes glow an ominous yellow. Humans were always intimidated by the display, and this one was no different.
"Where do you think I came from, you treacherous little snack?" she snarled at him.
He put his hands up in a placating gesture. "You must be Vriska, her vampire friend." His voice was tinged with guilt. "I'm so sorry." He seemed genuine as he said this, but Vriska didn't care. He was admitting culpability. It was time to make him tell her exactly what happened. She reached out with her mind, seeking his. It was open, pathetically so, and it was hardly any effort to grasp a hold over him. She pressed down on his mind as she spoke.
"Tell me what happened to Kanaya. Tell me whose fault it was. Tell me why I shouldn't just kill you," she demanded harshly, not caring as his eyes watered.
She knew her power could be overwhelming to a weak mind that she dug her proverbial pinchers in when she was angry. She had been trained in using her powers delicately, but there was no time for a soft touch, so she pressed harder, until his mouth popped open, words spilling out.
"It wasn't our fault. We were trying to talk to Jade with a magic spell. Rose summoned this awful seal, and it attacked Kanaya. I don't know what happened, but there was so much blood."
He was almost blabbing incoherently, either as a result of the trauma or her overzealous mind control.
"A seal attacked Kanaya? What do you mean, a seal? Was it a Selkie? Did she get mauled?"
She pressed harder, trying to get more information. This didn't make sense. None of it did.
I don't know. A Selkie's like a mermaid, right? This thing had tentacles, or it was full of worms. It was horrible, whatever it was. And they tore her apart."
He shuddered. His voice took on a pleading tone.
"Please don't kill me. We didn't know this would happen. I would never try to hurt her. We were going to be friends."
His voice cracked on the word friends, seemingly sincere. She scowled. What to do? Clearly this idiot wasn't a killer. No, it was worse. Rose had killed her own girlfriend with something evil. At his description of tentacles, she almost lost her grip on him, a long-buried memory threatening to overwhelm her. She really hoped it was worms. She dug in again, pressing for more information.
"Where is the hunter taking you all? What is going to happen to her?"
Riska knew she was running out of time. If she wasn't going to kill him, the others would notice him missing if this interrogation lasted much longer.
"He said we have to bury her, have to make sure the monster can't come back."
The human wrung his hands, clearly uncomfortable at the notion.
"I'm not allowed to call my dad, and nobody told her mom what happened. This is so, so wrong."
Her hatred was waning, at least for him, and there was a better place to direct it. She stared intently into his eyes and imagined her stinger lashing into his brain.
"You were going to leave this bathroom and act like you never saw me. You were going to pretend you never met me, like you don't know I'm here. I am going to turn into a scorpion, and you are going to hide me in your jacket pocket, then put me down inside the truck. You will not say a word about all of this to your friends. You will obey me. And before I turn, I need..."
She stopped mid-command. Was she really going to demand his blood? Kanaya had believed she didn't need to steal anymore, that she could live a life of blood given willingly. Would it be desecrating her memory to take from this human nobody, a human nobody, but one that Kanaya had promised to befriend? Guilt and grief dampened the glow of her vision.
"I need you to promise to get me some fast food. I'm starving,"
she finished lamely, her face feeling hot. Gods, she was losing her touch. He could only nod mutely. She approached, stalking forward, doing her best to hide the limp, grateful that the thick sweatpants hid the stiff weakness of the splint. He pressed against the wall, held in place by her powers and his fear. She hopped up on the sink counter, hoping he didn't notice how much her arms had helped the hop. She didn't want him to think she was soft and vulnerable, just because she'd let him live.
I'm going to transform. You are going to obey my instructions, understood?
Yes, I will not tell them about you.
He placed his hand on the sink counter, palm up. She grinned and, with a puff of smoke, was a scorpion once more. She skittered onto his hand, and he gently placed her in the pocket of his sweatshirt.
Rose. Guys, Dave's bro is staring at you through the window.
John's voice startled Rose, and she bolted to her feet. She hadn't noticed his approach. The boys stared at her, concern evident. She snatched up one of the bags and made her way to the door, ignoring the three pairs of eyes that were trained on her. Once outside, she made a beeline for the truck, brisk strides in sock-clad feet. By the time she reached the vehicle, Mr. Strider had caught up to her.
You stable?
His voice was surprisingly flat, all things considering. She jerked her head rapidly, the growing panic making her jittery. He seemed unconcerned.
When all this is over, you and I are going to have a conversation. You were going to tell me exactly what the hell you thought you were doing, where the hell you got that artifact, and why the hell I should ever let you near my brother again.
He blew out air through his nose, an exhale of frustration. Never seemed like you would do something so stupid. Guess that's on me. I want to believe that this was an accident. An idiot messing around without understanding the consequences. But my friend's daughter is dead, my brother's sister. And now I have to bury her.
With that, he opened the door to the back seat and jerked his thumb, clearly done with his spiel. Rose felt her face color with shame, and she meekly got into the truck, sitting down in her seat. The trash bin on the floor was empty, a new bag lining it. And there were water bottles in the cup holders. The others all climbed in. And they left the little gas station behind, sitting in uneasy silence and eating shitty fast food as they continued their journey. The sun was nearing the horizon when they left the desolate highway, the truck rattling and bouncing over an unkempt dirt trail. They'd stopped once more about an hour ago, just long enough to use the restroom in an abandoned building. Wherever they were, it was clearly one of the places left to rot, as what few structures Rose spotted were either burned out husks or overgrown with foliage. Up ahead, three dark shapes on the trail caught her eye. Dogs, she thought.
Shit, we must be near the old lab. We made good time,
Mr. Strider said, his tone light and conversational, as he slowed down to avoid the animals. Rose's brows shot up. The animals were primates, chimpanzees, maybe. And she couldn't help but stare back as the truck crawled past them, meeting their amber eyes as they stopped their tussle to watch. The largest one had a growth on its forehead. No, wait, that was a third eye. It blinked at Rose slowly as it watched the vehicle pass. It reminded her of her mother.
Where are we?
Rose dared to ask, voice hesitant.
Approach of the place I set up years ago to deal with cases like this. You don't really need to know more than that, but I will say we ain't in Texas anymore.
As Mr. Strider said this, he suddenly jerked the truck off the dirt track, swinging the wheel hard to the right. The woods had been creeping up around them, and the truck passed perilously close to a tree as it passed through what appeared to be solid foliage, but revealed itself to be a thick curtain of vines concealing an even less maintained path. Rose's hand flew to the oh shit handle bolted to the roof, clenching it tightly as they shook and rattled their way over each and every bump in the forest floor. After about 10 minutes of careening between conifers and wondering how Dave had survived a lifetime of this man's driving, they broke through another false wall of plant life and into a clearing, a perfectly circular area devoid of any greenery. The vehicle came to a stop. Rose stared through the window, eyeing every patch of slightly higher dirt, every divot of slightly lower soil, wondering which ones marked bodies, how many nameless, faceless problems Mr. Strider had buried there. Kanaya was going to join them, disposed of like a dirty secret, with no tombstone, with no ceremony, punished for the crime of trusting Rose one time too many. As Rose exited the trunk, she once again took note of her dry eyes. When would the deluge of tears begin? When she started digging, when Kanaya was dumped in the hole? When they were driving away, leaving the stain of sin behind?
There was no birdsong, no insects, no mournful howls in the distance. Wherever they were, the wildlife knew to stay away. Even with sunset fast approaching, there were no stirrings of the nocturnal, at least. Not within Rose's range of hearing.
All right, the three of you. Grab a shovel and start digging.
While Rose had been looking around, the others had apparently exited the vehicle as well, and Dave's brother stood somewhere behind her from the sound of it. She turned, finding him standing behind the truck. The door of the bed swung open so he could begin pulling out equipment. Three shovels were already shoved into the ground, standing upright in the barren soil. Dave walked up beside her, quirking his brows as if to ask, "You good?" Rose nodded coolly, as if she was good, as if anything that was happening was good. John trotted around the front of the truck to stand beside them and shot a nervous look in their direction. The three teens faltered, nobody wanting to be the first to grab a shovel. John opened his mouth hesitantly, closed it, then cleared his throat and opened his mouth again.
"Do you want us to dig right here, sir, or is there a different spot?"
His voice trailed off, as Mr. Strider emerged from behind the vehicle with the body bag in his arms, cradling the body inside as he walked past them.
"Grab your shovels and follow. I've got a spot in mind."
Rose exchanged glances with her friends. The three took the steps forward together, reached for their shovels in the same moments, then swiftly pivoted to follow Mr. Strider. He was already halfway across the clearing, moving with purpose towards a particular spot. He placed the bag on the ground oh so gently, then crossed his arms to watch the teens catch up to him.
"We need a hole at least 6 feet deep and big enough to actually fit her. Put it right here."
He pointed at the ground, where somehow he'd already drawn a rectangular shape in the dirt, about a yard away from where he'd placed Kanaya. The rectangular scratch marks running parallel with the bag in a way that made it clear the space indicated was large enough to contain her. "What are you going to be doing?" Rose inquired. It didn't seem fair, she thought, for only the three of them to dig. She knew there were four shovels, remembering seeing them when she'd panicked that morning.
"Hunter's shit. I'll be at the truck. I'll also be burning all those contaminated clothes. Hope nobody was too attached."
The man stalked off, not waiting for a reply. "All right then," Dave huffed. "Let's get this shit over with. It's already 7. Sunset hits in an hour." He walked to the rectangle of dirt, and the other two followed, each placing themselves so their back was to the bag, lining up along the long edge of the rectangle to begin digging. Rose ended up at one end, Dave in the middle, John on the other end. As she made the first thrust of the shovel, she couldn't help but imagine as she was digging her own grave. John. With each turn he made of the soil, his stomach threatened to do the same. Sweat ran freely down his face, dripping into the soil. His shirt was soaked through. He couldn't stop himself from remembering their chat on the way back from Gamzee's shop, the talk of death, hope, and shovels. He jammed the spade into the edge of the growing hole and had to stop, leaning on the handle.
"Ew."
Dave panted a breath. "You gonna puke again?" "Please don't do it in the hole." John couldn't answer. The inside of his eyelids were painted with the scene of that thing ripping Kanaya apart over and over on a loop. Rose's digging was an unwavering staccato in the silence of the night. John didn't know where the girl was pulling the stamina from, but he saw blood on her hands. He became aware of the blisters on his own. A pungent smell hit his senses, and he saw Dave screw up his nose as well, burning polyester and cotton.
"Hold on a sec," Dave said, raising a hand at Rose. "I think this is deep enough."
Rose's shovel stopped abruptly.
"Are you certain?" she asked, monotone.
He wiped away the strands of blonde plastered to his forehead with sweat. "I don't know, could you stand in it to measure?" "If you fit in, it has to be at least 6 feet."
Rose looked down. The yawning void of the hole stared back. "I am under the impression I would fit," she said flatly.
"Sure?"
Dave asked.
"Yes," Rose answered. "Just think we should be triple sure."
"I'm triple sure, Dave. But
I'll go tell your bro we're done,"
John interjected. He walked off without waiting for a response. He felt something inside his brain itching, like something was skittering between his synapses. He wanted to tell something to Dave or Rose, his friends, but every time he thought to do so, a throbbing pain shot through the base of his skull, driving the thought away. Not when he thought of Dave's brother, though. He wasn't his friend. John jogged over before the thought escaped him. He found Bro standing over the burning pile of clothes and branches, pinching the bridge of his nose. As he heard John approach, he quickly pulled his shades back over his eyes and turned to face him, arms crossed. John noted a tree that looked freshly fallen, cut cleanly in half of the trunk.
"Done?"
the hunter asked. "Yeah, but also there was something I wanted to tell..." John was suddenly aware of the absence of a many-legged weight in his pocket. The hunter noticed the sound before John and disappeared like a mirage, leaving a gust of wind trailing behind him towards the sound of more screaming. John rushed back to the clearing, finding Dave crushed between Rose and the vampire girl, Vriska. Rose's back was to the truck.
"Get the fuck out of my way so I can tear her apart, you moronic bloodbag! You're too much of a fucking coward to avenge your sister, but I won't hesitate to rip this murderous bitch to pieces!"
Vriska was absolutely livid. Her face flushed, Tyrion lunging repeatedly fang first toward Rose. Her eyes glowed a lethal yellow matched by the spittle flying from her mouth.
"Calm the fuck down! How'd you even get here?"
Dave was barely managing to fend Vriska off. It seemed he was only able to repel the vampire due to the massive splint impeding her movement, now visible due to her rolled-up pant leg. That and her apparent unwillingness to attack Dave himself. Rose was making no attempts to escape from Vriska's aggression, arms limp at her side.
"Let her. I deserve it," Rose said. "Shut the fuck up, Rose. Now's the worst time for that shit."
Dave gave Vriska a push back, and she seemed to lean back on her good leg, preparing for a pounce. John began to yell out a warning, but didn't get the chance. As soon as she lunged, Bro appeared between her and Dave, catching one of her hands and spinning her around into some kind of martial arts hold that had her being choked with her own arm. Vriska made a strangled noise and was scrambling against his grip, but the hunter was immovable. His hand was on his sheathed sword. John felt his heart skip a beat. John grabbed a shovel from next to the pit and readied himself to intervene if necessary. On behalf of who, he wasn't sure yet.
"Don't kill her!"
John yelled. Dave looked like he shared the sentiment, but was immediately distracted by Rose falling to her knees, a deluge of tears spilling out of her face.
"I'm not going to fucking kill her, just give her a little nap."
He pulled something from his hat and bit off the cap of a disposable syringe. Vriska screeched and disappeared in a puff of smoke. Scurrying away from the hunter was a sickly yellow scorpion, a few of its legs seemingly not moving correctly. Bro sighed a deep, deep, exhausted sigh. John did feel a little bad for all the stuff he was going through to protect them. He watched the hunter start speedwalking towards the scorpion, who wasn't making much ground. Dave was crouched near Rose, who had quickly gone from her frozen stillness to a waterfall of grief. It looked like everything finally caught up to her. He couldn't help but glance over his shoulder at the body bag, the whole reason for this expedition so quickly forgotten. No wind stirred the clearing. No animal chatter or birdsong to break Rose's sobs or the ksh of Bro's shoes on the dirt. Every follicle of hair on his body stood on end, a shiver that spread from his toes, through his stomach, up his neck. The bag slightly, gently, persistently move. The last rays of light slipped from the canopy like the fingers of a free climber losing their grip. The bag fell still.
"Guys?" John asked quietly.
"We're all kind of busy, man,"
Dave answered, trying to keep Rose from crumbling into a pile.
The bag," John said.
He looked to see where Bro had gone and saw him a little ways off, cursing under his breath as he tried to scoop up the scorpion between his hat and the handle of his sword. John looked back at the bag, his chest tight. He wasn't sure at this point if it was his mind playing tricks on him, but he had thought he heard a wheeze of breath. Against all better judgment, he took a step closer. Then another. And another. The bag remained still. In the distance, Bro proclaimed a "Got you, little fucker," followed shortly by another poof, a bang,
and more of Vriska's yelling. John swallowed and crouched next to the bag. He wondered if a squirrel or mouse or something had scurried from under the bag, causing it to shift. He felt a pang of guilt that Kanaya's remains were so freely jostled by the elements. "I'm sorry," he said, hoping he could speak some words that Rose couldn't at the moment. I wish I'd had a feeling about you. Aside from friendship, that I could have done something. Thankfully, the bag didn't answer. I'll take care of Rose and Dave, make sure they—" The night was split by the sound of tearing, as a gore-covered arm burst through the body bag, dripping red and a nauseating black-green. It oozed from under the inch-long claws that protruded from the fingertips, flailing back and forth before reaching back down and ripping the opening it had punched wider, and another hand joined it, pulling the opening wide. A shape began rising from the bag like a chrysalis. Before John could react to the mutilated face rising up towards him, an arm seized his wrist, wrenching him towards the figure with an impossible strength. John's scream stuck in his throat as his face was yanked towards a head with half of its flesh blasted off, revealing a stained skull whose jaw jammed open and closed. John watched in horror as the flesh, individual strings of muscle fiber, crawled across and stitched itself back across the skull, like some kind of parasitic worm hive. A sunken, popped eyeball bulged grotesquely, before deflating back down and rolling into place, a sickly yellow sheen just like Vriska's glossing over it. The vaguely darker yellow pupils wobbled back and forth in size as they attempted to focus on John's face. John felt his stomach turning again, seeing bloodless brown skin pull across the raw red muscle, forming a face he knew. John looked at Kanaya, her face pallid and starched, mouth, eyes, nose, pores, pouring some kind of jade ooze that separated from the blood, creating a smear of pungent liquid across her face that looked like some kind of melted apple candy. Her teeth, fangs. John felt a sudden flash of terror as her eyes dropped to his neck and her grip on his arm tightened. She screamed, the sound of air ripping across vocal cords that were half torn, and she threw John. He wasn't sure exactly what happened, just that his shoulder pulled from his socket as he flew across the clearing at light speed. He heard his own screaming suddenly cut off as the wind was knocked out of him. He impacted against something hard, which in turn broke to the force of his momentum, and he sailed into the woods, blue sparkles flooding across his vision. He heard more screaming from his friends and Vriska in the distance, all sounding panicked and frantic. He shook his head, dazed. He'd gotten dead leaves in his mouth when he landed and spat them out, still catching his breath. His shoulder burned, and it felt like the whole area was pulling against itself, spasming. He fought to control the muscles, pushing himself upright with his good arm. Fuck. It used the limited resource of the breath he was still catching, but felt good to say, made the pain a little more manageable. He got to his feet and staggered back towards the sound of strife, pushing some thin branches from a fallen tree out of his way. As he stepped through a small bush back into the clearing, his eyes immediately locked onto the body bag, where it looked like Kanaya's reanimated corpse was fighting to free itself from the thick material. Half of her torso was out, all of it still covered in gore, the clothes she had been wearing at the ritual hanging from her in tatters. She seemed to be having trouble keeping herself upright, and John stumbled to a halt in shock as he saw why. The right half of her rib cage was plainly visible. Below it was the edge of her spine. Half of her guts were just missing, like a cookie cutter had taken the chunk out. The top half of her torso kept tipping over to the missing side, no muscle or flesh present to hold her upright. She made a pitiful noise, and John wasn't sure if he was grateful or not to see the flesh knitting itself anew in the gap.
"Get the fuck off me before I cut your fucking head off!" Bro bellowed.
John saw Vriska scrambling on the hunter's back like a spider, her arms constricting above his shoulders fruitlessly as he jammed a palm into her mouth, stopping her from closing the loop of her choke and keeping her fangs from his neck simultaneously. Blood was dripping down his forearm from the puncture of Vriska's teeth. A trickle of yellow fluid lined the puncture holes, and the same liquid dripped from her open mouth. It was a noxious color, the same as Kanaya's eyes.
No!
Vriska sputtered over the hand shoved in her mouth.
I won't let you hurt her!
As Bro started wrestling her off his shoulders, John saw Rose, face painted with an indescribable emotion, leaned up against Dave, like the two were hugging. But Dave was obviously struggling to keep Rose from walking straight towards Kanaya. It was impressive he was managing to do so, as Rose towered over him, not even looking down.
Kanaya,
Rose squeaked. Bro pulled Vriska over his shoulder, slamming her into the ground on her back. She gasped, staggered as the breath was knocked from her lungs, and didn't have time to recover before Bro turned into a blur of speed and appeared over Kanaya, sword raised. Kanaya had pulled a leg from the body bag and looked up from her crouch just as the hunter's swing arced towards her. In slow motion, John heard Rose cry out, and the flash of steel reached its endpoint. Only, its endpoint wasn't past Kanaya, didn't leave a yawning cut or severed limb in its wake. It was halted. Kanaya's hand was raised, gripping the blade. More green and red dripped from where the blade must have cut, but her arm held, shaking. The hunter's arm shook as well, the strength he put into the strike frozen and outmatched. Kanaya stood up, still gripping the blade. Her torso had almost finished filling in, and there was a void look on her face. She sharply twisted her arm and the blade twisted, then shattered. Bro had maintained his grip on the sword despite the twist and was sent rolling a short distance away, swiftly springing to his feet. He frowned at the bladeless hilt in his hand.
Kanaya, stop!
John yelled, trying to get her attention. He waved his good arm up and down frantically. She turned, looking at him with that blank, yellow stare.
What the fuck, John? How the fuck are you alive?
Dave said, his voice sounding hysterical as he pushed back against Rose.
Alive?
John asked, bewildered.
She threw you through a fucking tree!
Dave yelled. John glanced over to where he entered the clearing. The stump of a tree was messily separated from its top half, which must have been the branches he'd pushed through, getting back to the clearing. He looked down at his shirt, which he now realized was mostly missing. Only some fabric around his collar and one armpit remained. Instead, a dusting of powdered wood rested on his stomach and was itching under his waistband. John had no idea what to do. He looked back to Kanaya and saw her gaze was still fixed on him. She took a staggered step forward.
Mr. Strider,
he said uncertainly, looking past Kanaya at the hunter who had placed his hands on the ground and seemed to be whispering something to himself. John felt the ground under his feet humming.
Vampire!
Dave's bro shouted at Vriska, who was rolling up onto her side, heaving. She looked up at him.
If you can't get it to stop, both of you are getting ashed here and now.
Vriska looked back and forth between him and Kanaya, her panic evident. The hunter's threat was proven not to be idle as swirling runic arcs began glowing across the clearing, just like what covered the apartment building. Kanaya was still yards away when she suddenly became very much directly in front of John. John yelped and brought up his good arm as she lunged at him mouth first. He felt a sharp pain on his forearm as her teeth closed around it and her weight knocked them both to the ground.
Vampire!
Dave's bro shouted again. John couldn't see between the tangle of limbs that was his struggle against Kanaya, but he heard a grunt of effort from Vriska. Kanaya reared her head back, hissing, her face contorted in animalistic malice. John, baffled, saw his arm was not bleeding, just two dark purple bruises stricken onto his flesh. This appeared to baffle Kanaya as well, as she seemingly hesitated to make another move. John heard a battle cry. A flash of blonde appeared in his peripheral vision, and a full shoulder check slammed into Kanaya. She was knocked off of John,
her apparent undead strength not doing much for her slight featherweight frame, as she was too distracted to defend against it. John heard an oof as Dave's shove sent him sprawling over John's torso. He scrambled up, regaining his footing, and grabbing at John's arms to try and pull him up as well. John barked in pain as Dave yanked his dislocated arm. He got halfway up, then fell back to a knee, unable to use Dave's help against the shocking burn in his shoulder. The burning glow of the runes of the ground doubled in his vision. "Ah, shit," Dave said. He hovered over John, unsure what to do. Rose stepped forward, no longer held back by Dave.
"Kanaya!"
she called out, just like John had a second ago. A second before being attacked. John's senses became a blur. Everything was sparkling blue, like he'd just stared into a cobalt sun. The glowing runes shifted in his mind, turning over and over into phrases, mantras, return to death that which should not live, purge the false souls, call the sun upon those who walk in shadow. Vriska's strained toil, one hand pressed to her temple, one hand reaching towards Kanaya, became a shuddering mirage, her form itself wavering like it was being distorted by heat. As she struggled, John saw a spectral scorpion tail shimmering like the rest, rising over her back. A whisper of something clung to Rose's lips, a dichotomous shimmer of wine darkness and deathly white. Bro's hushed incantations became like shouts in his ears. And when Kanaya lunged at Rose, John saw within her blur of motion a dark, deep, saturated blackness that sucked in all the light around it. The weight of some vitriol pulsing at the core of it like a black heart, something ancient. Every muscle in his body coiled in on itself, and he felt a snap in his shoulder, lightning arced through him. And he could only witness as his reflexes launched him through the air to protect his friend. John tackled Kanaya out of the air. As they fell into a tangled pile, he felt that aura emanating from Vriska surge, and the stinger stabbed down into Kanaya. The body he was grappling went rigid and stopped clawing at him like an animal. His ear, pressed against the rapid rise and fall of the chest, heard no heartbeat, nor was the motion paired with the sound of inhaling and exhaling. It felt more like spasms, spasms that ever so slightly began to slow. John felt the tingling in the air abate, fizzling away as the hunter's canting ceased. With it went the blue sparkles in his eyes, gone like fireflies with the sunrise. The uncanny quiet of the forest took over once more. The heavy breathing of the children in the circle once again an intrusion.
Can I let go?
John asked.
I think, Dave began to say.
No, Dave's bro cut him off. I don't know how you're holding her when she broke my goddamned sword with her wrist, but you can't let her go. That goes for you too, vampire.
John couldn't see Vriska from the angle he was stuck in while restraining Kanaya, but he thought he heard her whispering something over and over. I'm sorry?
Fucking... Come on, can you stand and hold her at least? Dave suggested.
Yeah, I guess,
John muffled, as much as he could while prone and half on top of Kanaya.
Your arm good?
Dave asked. John hadn't even noticed.
I think it popped back?
The injury seemed to make the most of the attention John was granting it, suddenly surging up in burning pain.
Ow, ow. Yeah, I can move it, but it doesn't want to. Let me just get you... Shit.
Dave was circling around them.
This is like some kind of fucking fidget puzzle.
As he paced, he came around to where he could see Kanaya's face.
Oh man, hey.
John didn't feel Kanaya's movements change. Dave coughed.
Right.
Dave put one hand under John's and the other around Kanaya's waist. John felt another set of arms pulling him up. He tipped his head to see Rose, carefully handling his injured arm while helping him stand.
We've got you, John, she whispered.
With their aid, John was on his feet and turned Kanaya around. Kanaya, in whatever state she was in, found her feet as well. John saw Dave's bro saying something quietly to Vriska,
and the vampire girl's strained expression lessened somewhat. As soon as the slightest bit of slack appeared in Vriska's arm, John felt Kanaya start attempting to move again. She wasn't exerting any superhuman strength, or at least it didn't feel like it, just seemingly coming to her senses in the strange situation that she was in. Judging by the expressions on Dave's and Rose's faces, whatever way Kanaya was reacting wasn't good. He felt her shuddering, and heard her voice, lost and plaintive, come out in a quiet whistle.
Mama?
For the full text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Madam Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Constant Conquest by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at sangabrielvo.com. And there you can learn about other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.